Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/recommend today.
You could spend the weekend doing the same old whatever, or you could conquer the weekend in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.
But right now, let's talk a little baseball, even some Major League Baseball to Portland. Mari Brown from Forbes, Biz of Baseball, Baseball America, Fangraphs. Where don't you write?
The Athletic hasn't picked me up yet, so I'm safe there.
You'll end up there eventually. Everyone does.
Yeah, it's pretty crazy how things are right now. But hey, I hope you guys are safe out there right now.
Yeah, we're safe. I mean, I guess. I don't know. You never know. I think Suk has the COVID, and he just passed it on to me and now the whole fan staff. Anyway, on Twitter, Mari Brown is at, oh, dang it, I lost it, at Biz of Baseball? At Bizball Mari.
There we go.
Bizball Mari, M-A-U-R-Y. Are we going to have a baseball season?
You know, as crazy as things are right now, I'm still giving it about a 75-80% chance of happening. I mean, I just think there's too much to lose right now. I really do. And we're talking about a lot of money on both sides of this thing. It's just how they're going to have to figure it out, and it's just really acrimonious.
Yeah, you look at it. I mean, I've heard everything from even if it started up and you played the 82-game schedule, you're talking about losses of what? Somewhere in the neighborhood of $5 billion?
Yeah, it's looking closer to four, but that's kind of misleading, guys, because that's what they call baseball-related revenue. Owners make a lot of money elsewhere. I mean, if you own a regional sports network, right, you're paying money back to yourself for those rights fees. And there's other stuff. I mean, baseball, all 30 owners own a 15% stake in Disney Plus and ESPN Plus. I mean, so there's other money flowing in. But look, let's not kid ourselves. They're going to lose some revenues this time around. The players are saying, of course, you know what, when times were really good, you didn't want us to share. Now you want us to go ahead and help you guys. So it's all capitalism when things are great, and it's all socialism when there's headwinds.
How dug in are the players on this? Because you listen to like what Scherzer said and some of the other comments. It sure seems like they're not, at least from a public standpoint, not willing to negotiate a further pay cut.
Yeah, they sound pretty galvanized right now, and that's surprising because the way that the league presented it was they were like, well, if you make under $1 million, and that's 65% of the players. I mean, people don't, I don't think, understand that there are a lot of players that aren't making these mega contracts. They would get like 90% of their pay. It would be the guys at the top end, your Mike Trouts and your Bryce Harpers and your Cole Hamels, or Cole from the Yankees, that would get burned. But look, you know, I think that overall, they are pretty galvanized. They're not wanting to walk away with this and bend on it. They're going to do their own counterproposal on Friday. They're not even going to address the one that the league offered. So that's kind of where we're at.
Don't the owners usually win in these types of negotiations?
Well, they do because they have time on their hand normally, right? I mean, if you have a strike or a lockout, it's a lot easier to get 30 guys to basically stand up and go, you know, we can go ahead and hold the center with 30 people. You got, you know, 1,000 players or more when you're talking about the players. So, yeah, I mean, normally they do, but this is a little bit different because they're really rolling up on a hard deadline about whether they're going to get a season in at all. If you're already in a lockout or a strike, it's largely a long walk. And it's a battle of attrition.
Yeah, it kind of feels like the players in this particular scenario, like you said, this is a different case. It kind of feels like the players have more leverage because the owners need to get something in, right? They need to recoup some revenue, and the players do need money. But at the same time, I feel like the owners need it worse this time. Whereas before, like you said, they could just wait out the players, and you know, because they were the ones that needed the money more.
Yeah, and it's kind of like that, guys. I mean, I would say, look, everybody's going to lose money. Nobody likes, you know, everybody has house payments. You know, people forget that the league advanced them $170 million for April and May pay, June hits, if there's no season, well, there's no more pay. They'll get their service time for the year, but they will not get any pay. So, look, there's just a lot of incentive. I mean, people have home payments just like you or I. Their homes may be bigger, but look, everybody has mortgage payments. And so, you know, I just think there's a lot of incentive to make it happen. But it, to the larger point, everything is really being controlled by the players right now. And I think that they have a pretty solid case to make in this situation. It's just their career lives are shorter. You know, you'd never know what's going to happen. And once again, there's nothing to say, and I can guarantee you guys, that 2021, 22, 23, 24, 25, you're going to see player salaries drop dramatically as the owners go ahead and shift to try and absorb some of this stuff and try and recoup their losses.
Yeah, do you buy some of the figures that are thrown out there? I mean, there was the report, a week or two ago that was saying that without fans, owners are going to lose $400,000 plus per game, and they're painting the dire picture of, you know, of this. Do you buy that owners are in this sort of trouble?
You know, I don't. Guys, I mean, it's a $10.7 billion industry, right? I guess I look at it this way. You know, the airline industry made billions and billions of dollars in profits. And then, oh, my gosh, something happens, and suddenly we need a bailout. And I look, are they going to lose revenues? It's a cash flow problem. It's a liquidity problem for them. It's not that they don't have a lot of money. It's just that they're going to take it in the shorts on this. There's no denying it. It's how bad it is and how they get that money back. Well, guys, look, you know, at the end of the 2021 season, they get a 38% increase on their Fox deal that they have. Their national TV deal there comes along. And then ESPN and Turner are right behind them. They're in the middle of those negotiations. They're going to whack the crap out of the minor leagues right now. Players are being laid off and furloughed right now. Plus, they're going to contract 40 clubs. I mean, I get that they're going to lose some money right now, but they're absolutely going to start to be able to recoup some of that right away.
Okay, this is Mari Brown from Forbes. What happens to our local minor league teams?
So the Hops are going to be fine. They'll go to full season single A. The Kaiser Volcanoes, I think, are going to be closed down, guys. I really do. They're going to realign and basically make the short season single A full season. And they're going to do regional alignment, which will lower some of the travel. So, you know, it is unfortunate for the Volcanoes. But remember, guys, I mean, there's the potential that the way that this works out is that there is still baseball being played there. They just will not be affiliated with minor league baseball. The league has made it clear that they want to try and keep some semblance of baseball in the communities that have them. They just won't be associated with minor league baseball. They'll be kind of like a dream league, if you want to call it. I mean, it'll be players that have a possibility. But, guys, I mean, the draft is 2,000 players each year. I mean, you just – the odds that many of those players will ever see a major league roster are zero. And so they looked at that and said, hey, you know, it's just not efficient. We can make a case that it's largely about increasing their profits. But there's going to be a significant shift around the minor leagues, guys. They're trying to basically pull minor league baseball under Major League Baseball's umbrella. Instead of an affiliation, they're going to move their offices inside the commissioner's office. And it'll be like the American League and National League are now. I mean, they used to be separate offices. Now they're all underneath, of course, the commissioner's office. So I think that you're going to see a big shift in how the minor leagues look. Maybe for better, certainly going to be worse for some communities.
Well, you look at it too. I mean, we're all talking about, you know, the financial trouble that Major League Baseball has, and, you know, they've got TV money and they'll find a way. But what about, you know, just the ones that aren't being contracted and done away with? What happens to just these minor league teams if baseball can't be played or there's no fans? Because I'm assuming that's the only way they make money.
Yeah, I mean, I wrote about this a few months ago, guys, when this thing first hit, that we would see teams collapse just under the financial weight. It's completely different. They are almost 100% driven by the fan experience. So, yeah, I mean, I am not privy to some of the financial information, but I can't imagine that these clubs aren't under dire straits. Now, look, the Hops are fine. Thank goodness they've taken care of their employees and, you know, they have a really good deal. Now, remember, they're also associated to the largest market in the country without Major League Baseball. So that's an advantage to them. But some of these smaller places, you know, they're absolutely taking it in the shorts, and it's just really unfortunate.
What is this doing to help or hinder MLB to Portland?
So it's interesting. I just wrote about it. You know, their exclusive agreement for the Terminal 2 site expired quietly just on Wednesday. Nobody said anything about it. So I reached out to Craig Cheek from the Portland Diamond Project yesterday, and he said that they're still very much involved. Obviously, the COVID situation has put everybody in telework and their higher priorities. In the near term, guys, it doesn't, you know, help them at all. It puts them as a kind of extreme back burner, right? I mean, they got to get the situation sorted out with the major league players and the minor leagues. But in the next year or so, look, if you wanted to recoup losses quickly, expansion is a great way to do it, because you're going to do $1 billion in expansion fees, and you're doing that for two teams. So you get a $2 billion infusion to the owners right away to help offset this, and I don't know how that isn't in the back of not only Rob Manfred's mind, but the owners.
And then you look at what's happening with the A's. Is this just posturing? You hear that they didn't make their payment to the stadium. They're not paying their minor league players. Are the A's really in this sort of bad financial situation, worse than everyone else, or are they just being cheap?
They're being cheap. And the Marlins were the only club that ran in the red last year. They're doing it. I don't understand this, guys. I really don't. I get that John Fisher owns the Gap, and they're losing money left, right, and sideways. But you don't treat your other business holdings like your Major League Baseball holding. It's just a bad look. When there are clubs in Milwaukee and other small markets that are able to do this thing, it just looks really bad. So, you know, I don't know what the thing is here. You know, they're really the kind of the black sheep right now in Major League Baseball because of these actions. And it just doesn't look well on John Fisher, their owner.
What are the odds the A's and or Rays move, whether it be Portland or anywhere else?
You know, I don't know, guys. I mean, this has got to throw everybody's plans up in the air. I'll go back to the Portland situation because I talked to Craig Cheek yesterday. I asked him if their capital stack, which is, of course, their investors, had been hit by this. Now, everybody is being hit, so there's no way that there isn't somebody in their group that hasn't been affected. But he said that the group is pretty solid, and that leads me to believe that if they're making cash calls to ownership of the A's or to the Rays, they're going to somehow weather this thing. The situations in Montreal or the situation here is really going to drive whether you make that sort of thing happen. I'm still of the belief that the Rays are moving to Montreal. Mm-hmm. I believe the A's are going to stay put. It's just got to – everything is slowed down, guys. I mean, everything is. You guys, me, everybody is being hit by this thing. So I think that the A's get it sorted out, and I think that it would be better for Portland for expansion. I really do. Rather than having the A's right now. I just think it just throws the league's overall plans up in the air.
That's interesting that you said that, because we were talking about that openly yesterday. Is we don't really know where all the Portland money's coming from, and there's plenty of rich guys that are 30-40% less than what they were a couple months ago. And I wonder that even with the ballpark side, expiring, you know, some of that money, that $2.5 billion you're dumping in for an expansion fee to build the stadium and all that, some of that has to be recouped, obviously, by the development around the stadium. And if you had to move it outside of Portland, I'm assuming that land becomes less valuable than if you're building it in the city. And just that whole economic structure of a $2 billion investment and how that can't help but look differently now than what it did a couple months ago.
Yeah, it does. Cheek thought that this was actually a good thing for the city, right? I mean, so here our unemployment numbers are everybody's getting walloped, and that you would have this development that would be there that would be mixed use. Now, remember, guys, of course, we're nowhere near on the cusp of this thing. So you're trying to think, when you do these kind of things, you're trying to think out, you know, 5 or 10 years on how Portland's overall development would be. And that's a huge component to this because of the mixed use. Doesn't work quite the same as if they went to Lloyd Center, which, by the way, is still, you know, they have an eye on it. And look, mall life was already cratering. If the pandemic hasn't absolutely killed the Lloyd Center already, you know, it probably will be right around the corner. But that doesn't have a lot of opportunities for, additional development. So, yeah, I mean, it does affect them. Here's the thing that's surprising, though, guys. So this 1 year, they did 2 6-month agreements on their due diligence windows. They're paying $37,000 plus every month for this. They've burned $450,000 in just this exclusivity agreement with the Port of Portland. And I imagine that it will continue to go out. I mean, it could be, you know, $500,000 here soon. So they're burning money. They do have money. But eventually you got to get to a point to where it's like, what are we doing here, guys? Right. You know, we need to start to recoup it somehow.
So is T2 out fully?
No. They said that, you know, Craig said that they were going to go ahead and meet with, you know, make some arrangements. They're trying to make these things happen. You know, once again, there are higher priorities. He wants to be sensitive to the situation that's going on. But look, I mean, business is moving for most everybody in those kind of situations. There's telework. They will either reach a third agreement, or there will be some form of another agreement that will happen that will allow them to do this. They very much want to make the T2 site happen and the development that goes around
okay.
it.
Okay.
I ask you real quick. You mentioned $400,000. I get asked this a couple times. Can you just even ballpark it? What do you think they've spent so far on the effort behind the scenes between architects and firms and studies and environmental things and, you know, then these agreements? What do you think they've spent so far on this?
Well, it's a great question. I don't know what kind of money these guys are pulling in. Whether they've got to be getting paid in some capacity. Now, there's just a core group, but look, I imagine if you've dumped $450,000 into that, are you $500,000, $600,000 more? I think that's really possible. Is it a million? I don't know. I really don't know, guys. But look, it's not if you have enough people, it's not. Chump change in some senses, it's going to be more for some than others that are involved in this. But, I keep hearing, money's not an issue. Money's not an issue. Money's not an issue. I just don't know too many business owners that like to flush money down the toilet. I don't believe for one second this is flushing it down the toilet, but they need to move forward. And that's hinging largely on another piece that we haven't talked about, which is a traffic and transportation study, which looks to be a couple months out.
Oh, for that site, you mean?
Yeah, that site.
Okay, yeah, because I don't know. I think MLB will eventually expand, and I think Portland is putting itself in good position. However, when you're trying to get the city to build all the infrastructure to get people up to T2, that certainly seems like some serious heavy lifting. Do you really think that even though they want T2 because they'll make the most money off of T2, that eventually, if Portland gets a ballpark, it will be at T2?
Yeah, well, for all the, if you think about it from a long-term urban planning perspective, it makes a lot more sense. Look, guys, you guys know, you drive in the Lloyd District, sure, there's one off-ramp off 84 that dumps right there. But if you came off I-5, you're snaking through the, the Lloyd District on Broadway and all. That's a mess as well.
That's true.
So look, I don't know if there's a perfect location in either one of these, but from, baseball is going to want that T2 site, but there's a bunch of other things, the overall development. And this is another thing, right? The city has to think about this in terms of you're talking about doing something huge. It's not just the ballpark. It would be something akin to developing South Waterfront. And so when you're getting into something that complex, there's just a bunch of stuff. We just had an election, granted the mayor's been reelected, but you have new commissioners. So you don't know the political landscape. They're going to have to feel that out. So there's just a bunch of stuff. And then there's all the zoning that goes through with the state. So it's just it's a really complex thing. I was involved in the first stab at this in 2003, 2004, 2005. And it's always difficult. None of this stuff is easy. So, patience always has to kind of be the overriding thing. And this whole thing with the pandemic has just slowed everything down.
Yeah. Well, they've got a hell of a group, though. How many sites do they have? So you got the T2. They still want to build it there. Lloyd Center, a lot of people are whispering about Lloyd Center. I know the Zedell Yards, which is down here by us in South Waterfront, may be in play. Are there others?
Yeah, so I have heard that there is another one that's south. Now, I don't know exactly where, whether it's somewhere near Sherwood or something to that effect, but I've heard that there is a place outside the city limits that they looked at. Now, how serious they took that, I don't know. But you're going to want to keep it in the urban core, guys. Once again, if you're trying to do a development, now, with that all said, Atlanta and Cobb County were able to do this, where you basically bring the city to the ballpark. You might potentially be able to do that sort of thing, but I don't think it has nearly the gravitas. It certainly wouldn't have the pull, and it certainly, requires doing all the other political minutiae that goes along with it, that they just have a better situation in terms of making it happen in Portland for a number of reasons, travel, all this other stuff. So I don't think they're going to walk away from these two sites and certainly T2 is their preferred location until they're really run out of options.
Yeah.
And it doesn't sound like they're there yet.
All right, read him in Forbes, online, read him everywhere. Biz of Baseball, it's the great Maury Brown. Local, too. Thanks, Maury.
All right, guys, you take care of yourself. Be safe.
Okay, picture this. It's Friday afternoon when a thought hits you. I can waste another weekend doing the same old whatever, or I can conquer it. I can hop into my all-new Hyundai Santa Fe and hit the road. Any road, the steeper the better. Because my all-new Santa Fe is available with H-Track all-wheel drive, so I can hit the trail without a worry in the world. Heck, with three rows and best-in-class rear cargo space, I can pack the whole family in with all our gear. We've got available dual wireless charging for our phones, so we'll never lose touch with civilization, and we won't lose touch with the primordial power of Mother Earth. So which is it? Waste the weekend or do something a little more epic? And conquer it in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com or call 562-314-4603 for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.